question. You're listening to Dynamo's Dozen. With your host, Ian the Dynamo Kelly. Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week, where I will talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh socks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talc. This is Dynamo's Dozen. And I am here today once again with familiar voices on this show, Niall Hogan and Ted Irving. How are you guys?
All good.
Yeah, all good here.
Absolutely. Lads, welcome back to the show once again. This week we decided, now that we're getting pretty close, obviously, to football season kicking off again, with the pre-season friendlies about to start, all the teams back in action, and obviously lots of silly season transfer news up in the air. We can have a little bit of fun with that. And also, I think the battle between the two main wrestling companies is starting to pick up as well. So we can have a bit of fun with that. We're just going to shoot the shit today, as we always do. First of all, how are you guys? You as well?
Yeah, pretty good, man.
Is there looking forward to the start of the new season? Let's jump in, actually, to the start, of the football season, because, as I said, all the teams have kind of rejoined now and met up for pre-season training. I guess we can all speak individually about our clubs, what our hopes are for the season, how you see your transfer window going. I'll duck out of the transfer window part, because we don't have one. And I guess I'll start with you, Ted. So, yeah, three questions in one. Obviously, the squad, I'm sure, at this point, has met back up together. There's news and rumour and innuendo going around about what players are coming in, what players are going. The United camp seems a little bit kind of up in the air at the moment. So, how are you feeling about the new season? Of course, you meet Chelsea in the first game. But before that, transfers, squad you'd like to see, players you'd like to see leave, and realistic players that you'd like to see come in?
It's a weird one. So the squad has met up, I think, in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Nearly everyone is back now. I think Sanchez isn't back yet because, obviously, the Copa America was on. So he needed time off for that.
You wouldn't add that.
I don't know. He did quite well in the Copa America, so
he did quite well in football too.
I know, yeah. So just hopefully that translates this coming season. But as far as I know, both him, Rojo, and Fred have yet to come back, because they're all in Copa America, obviously. So they're not training at the moment with us, but everyone else I think is back. Wan-Bissaka is obviously, like, we've signed him, so he's joined up. And Daniel James.
50? Whoa.
Sorry?
£50 million, isn't that right?
Yeah, £50 million for him, yeah. And I'm sure there's probably some add-ons somewhere else as well. But I don't know, he's young, he's a quality right-back. So it's a position we really needed filled, because, like, Ashley Young, great servant to the club, but you know, he's not a right back, and that position needed to be filled. So
not getting any.
That's what's wrong. Yeah,
and you know,
fortunately, that's where it's gone.
There is always a premium on young British players as well, especially when they've got long contracts. So It's kind of like the going rate. But Niall, do you want to chime in on any of that there?
Yeah, I think he's a decent player without a doubt, but 50 million is a massive stretch. But I think, as you said, you get hit with that sort of English player tax. And yeah. Then on top of that, again, once United get interested, forget about it. There's another 10, 15 million going on it straight away because they know that there's kind of a little bit of desperation there to land a few players. So they know they kind of have you.
This is true, yeah.
You know, that would be my view. And I'm looking at Wan-Bissaka. He's a decent player. There's no doubt about it. He's a baller. Like, but I mean, 50 million is a lot of poke for a Crystal Palace right back.
I guess what you're saying there is like you're kind of paying at the moment. You're paying for a decent player at the moment, but then the tax, I guess, is almost that you're paying for the potential almost as well.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. You're paying for the potential there as well. But I mean, he's pretty like. I mean, he had a very, very good season for Crystal Palace. There's no doubt about.
Does look good, yeah.
Yeah, but I just think at the moment, the world is aware of the what would you say, the disjointment at the moment at Man United and the willingness they need to make a massive rebuild. So they know that once they get involved, once United throws its hat into any transfer, there's going to be money, is going to be rattling up on it straight away. Like, I'm thinking, if Everton came in, say, for Wan-Bissaka, they probably would sign him for about 30 million.
Yeah, well, I mean, Everton...
You know that kind of way?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But Everton kind of have that new money as well now, where people are kind of... Everton are always looking for the bargains. But no, I do see your point. Like, I mean...
Yeah, but you know what what I'm talking about is if you look at Everton, that's just an example. I'm only talking about Everton.
Oh, I know.
Like, Everton wouldn't have the goals that Man United has in terms of what they want to achieve in a particular season.
Nor should they.
Yeah. Well, whether they should or not is irrelevant. I mean, that's clearly United still view themselves as being the biggest club in the world and stuff like that. And they have aspirations to get back to the top, as they always do.
Yeah.
But the rebuild there at the moment is massive. So clubs that are selling players to them are fully aware of this.
Yeah. Well, Ted, you know? Do you want to chime in on that there? Obviously, because it is your club. So.
Yeah, well, United have, for the last... I don't know how many years, but we always get stung with this extra. There's obviously, as you said, the English player tax. Like, yeah, okay, everyone's going to get hit with that. But there's a special little tax that we get hit with, the United tax. And it's mostly common where if we go looking at a player, like we looked at Aubameyang a couple of years ago and we weren't getting him for less than 80 or 90 million.
Yeah.
And then Arsenal go looking at him, bam, 60 million. Morata, 80 million. Bam, Chelsea look at him, 60 million. There's about 20 million odd that if United go looking at you, they're not getting you without that tax. So we have to, like, you know, we just have to accept that that's what we're going to spend. And Wan-Bissaka, it's an investment. Like, if he kicks on and he keeps going, you know, that's right back sorted for the next 10, 15 years. So,
yeah,
50 million is a lot, but if it works out, it's a quality investment, you know, and sometimes you just have to take that risk on it, I think.
I think
the other thing as well is what you're looking at with Wan-Bissaka as well is if it doesn't work out, you still have a residual sort of sell on amount that you can gain back. Whereas if you look at what they're talking about, say with Aubameyang, he's 29 now. If you buy him on a 5-year deal, you have no real residual sort of sell on money that you can recoup.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's him done.
Yeah, that seems to be a huge factor these days in the transfer business.
I agree 100% actually, because with Aubameyang, no, I think Aubameyang's a bit of a different animal to Alexis. I do think Aubameyang, he's got the kind of pace that United need. He's a natural finisher. Well, I don't know whether I go as far as to say he's a natural finisher actually, but he gets enough chances because of his pace and whatnot. That, you know, he does always end on a pretty high, you know, goal tally at the end. If you're looking in the market now, if I'm a United fan and I see that there's an opportunity to get someone like an Aubameyang for what, like maybe 40 million or whatever, because Arsenal obviously need that 40 if they want to proceed with their transfer business with the likes of Zaha and whoever else they're looking for. So United almost do have Arsenal by the short and curlies, as much as Arsenal may think they have United by the short and curlies. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I wouldn't want to invest in Aubameyang yet. Like, as you said, you will get the goals from him, but as Niall said, there's no sell-on value, and it's a risky one because a lot of what Aubameyang does rely on is his pace, and your pace goes down year after year. So, you know, how long does he have? If he has 3 or 4 years left at that pace, that's fine. What if he only has one? What if he has two?
You could get the Torres deal that Chelsea got then, where his pace is just dwindling. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So that's
but you've also got to remember with Aubameyang, he had Ramsey feeding him most of the season and Lacazette, so he had quality players around him creating these chances and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So like, unless he's going to United, and unless United are also going to get a Fernandes or Pogba's going to stay or something like that, you know, you're talking about a sort of a lone soldier again.
Yeah.
You know, so you could end up with the Lukaku situation again. Lukaku 2 years ago was phenomenal.
Yeah, this is,
you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Well, I think Fernandes, I think that deal is essentially done now. It's just the nitty gritty getting it finished. Pogba's his own animal. There's been a lot of, you know, there's positives and negatives to him. One of the biggest negatives is obviously his agent, who has come out recently and said that, you know, United isn't what we thought we were going to be signing into, and now we want to move on. Well, you know, that's not going to appease fans. It's not going to appease the club. You know, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, I agree.
Until there's a deal in place. And, you know, if Pogba wants to leave, if this is too big a challenge for the man, then, you know, that's his own choice. But this guy, he claims he loves United, claims he's one of the best players in the world. Well, it's time to start showing these things. You know, consistency is one of the most important things. You know, you don't have to be... John O'Shea, I love John O'Shea, and he was one of the most consistent performers we had. But is he ever getting into anybody's, you know, best in the world categories?
Yeah, sure.
I think he deserves it, but he's consistently good. And that is something that you need. And Pogba just... He's flashy. Like, he'll have a really good season, he'll have a poor season, he'll have a good game, he'll have a bad game. And the problem is that you don't know which one you're going to get. And it seems like his good games are against teams we've already beaten anyway. So why not just, like, if you can't deliver when it's necessary, then yeah, take the 150 million we're being offered for him, but apparently I'll just take that and spend it elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. And I mean, so I guess finishing on that, Ted, in 30 seconds, give us, I guess, your realistic hopes for where you finish this season, and realistic kind of players that you think may come in.
Right, so realistic hopes is top four, because I think both Arsenal and yourselves are going to struggle. Use because you can't sign anyone. Arsenal, because they refuse to spend more than 40 million to sign anyone. And signings, your man Fernandes looks like he's coming in. There's still talk of De Ligt because Juventus aren't meeting his thing, but I can't see us getting him.
That's
Fernandes. I don't know. I don't know if there's anybody else we are going to sign. I think that'll probably be it if we get him. Maybe your man Longstaff from Newcastle. That's probably it though.
Okay. Okay, I guess in my rebuttal to us struggling, I think we're actually probably in more of a stable place than United, to be fair, because we pretty much have the squad that we had last year with young, hungry players coming in. I agree in the sense that it's still up in the air. We don't know how Lampard's going to perform. But I mean, in terms of the unity at the club, it's going to be a lot stronger than it has been, I think, since probably Mourinho first came. But we'll get on to Chelsea later. It's not about a debate here. It's more about, like, I see your point, but I do see United, Arsenal, and Chelsea as like a flip of the coin in that sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I was thinking more because, you know, you have lost Hazard, who was your biggest goal scorer and supplier.
Oh, no, I understand that. But, you know, there's young lads there. This Pulisic guy looks good. I'm not saying he's going to fill the boots of Hazard, but he's young, hungry. I mean, his finish with Dortmund was unreal. And then obviously once Hudson-Odoi comes back and, you know, blah, blah, it's up in the air. I mean, obviously these are all guessing games, but I do agree it's the three teams there that could be, you know what I mean, that could be fighting it out for that fourth spot.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, Chelsea still finished ahead of Tottenham last year. Just thought I'd throw that in there just to annoy Tottenham fans, but there we go.
They've spent a bit of money this year, though.
Well, they say that. I think that's going to be their one signing, and that's it, to be honest with you.
Two, I think, now.
You are?
I think they made two already now.
Well, who's the other guy? Because no one's heard of him.
Yeah,
they're supposed to be getting your man Olmo as well, and he's a serious baller.
Who?
Your man Olmo. I think he played for Spain in the under. He was the player of the championships, wasn't he, for the under 21s? And he's a Spanish under 21 player, and then I think he plays for Zagreb in the Croatian league. But he's a serious baller. United were looking into him, and he turned United down in favour of Spurs. Apparently,
he's a jobber.
Well, I don't know. You don't become a jobber at under 21. You become a jobber at 28, 29.
Yeah, jobber as soon as Spurs because you become a bottler. Anyway, that's enough abuse on Spurs from me. having fun, of course, having fun. Niall, I guess same kind of routine for yourself with Liverpool. I mean, it's between Liverpool and Man City this year. I think the world knows this. Let's kind of. I guess the questions posed to yourself would be probably slightly altered because you have different aspirations. Obviously, Champions of Europe. Thought I'd throw that in for you. And guess who you beat?
Yeah.
Who was
poor,
it?
Poor Spurs fans getting slaughtered this evening.
Bottled by the kid.
All right. Champions League final I've ever seen.
Oh, Jesus Christ. But I was just glad Liverpool won it. Imagine me saying this.
There's no such thing as a bad Champions League final if you win it.
This is very true. But
I don't know if you watch that. I think you'd disagree. That was dire to watch.
It doesn't matter.
We just bottled it less.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was two bottles. It was just which was the weaker. But Noel, I guess the question that I'd pose to you is obviously realistically, where do you see this challenge and like what do you think that Klopp needs to do to kind of to bring them to that? I mean, there was two points in it? So what does he need?
One point.
Sorry, 1 point, my mistake. One sorry. Point,
yeah.
What does he need to do this season to obviously get them that bit further? Obviously, City have signed only one player, I think. They've obviously got away with a transfer ban again because they're obviously sucking someone's dick. So I don't know what's going on there. But, that's always going to be the way it is with Man City and
PSG. I think probably for this season, for us, it's probably going to be just sort of hopefully more of the same. But just with it probably just a slight bit more consistency in terms of trying to avoid that kind of dip that we had in the season. But I think we'll probably need about I'd be hopeful that we'd bring in probably two players, if not three.
That's all I think we need.
And personally, one of them would be kind of like, you know, like a backup for Robinson or something like that. Even though we've got Milner there, I'd like to see an attacking midfielder coming in, a proper attacking midfielder who could weigh in. The likes of a Fernandes, who could come in and pitch in with a few goals there, because I think we're heavy reliant on the front three. I'd like probably either Origi to step up a bit more and maybe give us a different kind of option, or else bring in a decent striker. And that's really it. We're not really looking for anything else. I mean, we've a decent enough squad there, and Man City obviously with Lewis and Company. Company is very, very big for them, and Fernandinho is on another year now as well. So hopefully we could pose a decent challenge to them this year. You know, and really, you know, we brought them to the last day of the season. You can't ask for any more than that except winning. So it's not too bad.
I mean, on this Fernandes talk, like realistically. You know, as soon as teams are linked with anybody, they're going to be like, oh, this is exactly what we need. I don't know about the guy. I know he's got a high rating in FIFA. I know he's pretty decent in the Portugal League. I have a couple of Portuguese tell me about Fernandes and about this young kid that signed for Atletico. But like one of my friends who's actually a Sporting fan, was saying that like it's a big step up. Like the goals that you'll see in Portugal won't necessarily automatically translate to the Premier League.
But I think if you look at his stats, if he came in to say United or Liverpool, say, if he even achieved half those stats in the Prem, we'd be pretty happy, you know.
Well, I think Liverpool more so because they have the squad that can, play around. Yeah. Obviously, United will be expecting him to come in and be the guy. Do you know what I mean? And that can be different, can be a little bit more pressurized. Do you know what I mean? Than say fitting into a ready-made team. But I mean, I'm not knocking the guy. I just don't know. Obviously, much.
I think in terms of United fans, I think they're more realistic. They know they're in transition, so they know they have to give it a bit of time, and they know that like if they only sign 3 players in this window, they know it's nowhere near enough. And especially if they lose Lukaku and Pogba potentially, you know what I mean? They're kind of back to where they were, in some respects. You know what I mean? And they still have to sign. A full back and stuff like that, or a full half or whatever it is, you know what I mean? So the likes of Harry Maguire or Delaney or whoever it is, they're going to be crying out for that, because if they open up at the start of the season with the likes of Jones and Smalling again, there'll be absolute war.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, they needed, realistically, their target going into this transfer window was, they know that, not a target, but they needed about 6 players. So you need to be getting about 4 or 5 in this window. And that's assuming you're hanging on to what you have, because the players they want to get rid of are the players that they're signing up to long contracts. And the players they don't want to get rid of are the ones that are looking and angling to go out the door.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, realistically, I mean, if you're going to rebuild a team and stuff like that and get back competitive again, you don't really want to be losing a Pogba, because there's no guarantee, even if you get 150 million from him, there's no guarantee you're going to be able to sign world-class players in, and especially when you don't have Champions League football to offer.
Yeah.
So it's a real struggle. Like, you know, I'm looking at the likes of Lukaku and Pogba. If you're going to sell them, you have to tie them into a player plus money deal so you can bring in some of those top players as part of those deals. Otherwise, you're not getting them in. You know what I mean? You're not going to convince a Verratti to go in there. You're not going to convince a Varane. You know what I mean? You might get Gareth Bale because he's like, you know, he's the bastard child now of Madrid. You know what I mean? So, like, he may be interested in coming in, but he's not really going to be a solution for United because he's probably only going to play 50% of the games in the season.
Yeah, a good shout that I saw today, because I watch a lot of Serie A, as you know. Good shout that I saw, a player that that Conte doesn't want at Inter anymore is Raja Nangalan. I saw they were thinking of offering cash plus him to United. I mean, if there was a good deal for United, I think as a player coming in, he'd be absolutely perfect for United in midfield. Yeah. I mean, he is just pure steel.
Yeah.
Like,
but see, the thing about United at the moment as well is, no matter who they bring in, if you look at last season, no matter who they bring in, it has to be an improvement. Yeah. Because if you think about it, they were basically so poor all around the park. You know what I mean? That no matter who you bring in, you're going to improve the squad, assuming you can maintain what you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but like, I mean, if you're like, if you think about it logically, like if you're losing Lukaku and you're bringing in Aubameyang, it's only a marginal improvement if you think about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Lukaku's a real strange one, because he's the sort of player that, like, 2 seasons ago, like, so before he signed for us, he was, you know, he had a high goal scoring rate. But he seems to do that where he, you know, the team's already up by 1 or 2 and then he'll bang in another 2.
Yeah.
But he doesn't seem to have that nerve, that steel in front of the net to be the
he's normally top notch for Belgium, isn't he?
He is, but again, Belgium play a different style of football as well.
I think it's weird this year as well, because you're looking at United in the season just gone, you know, and if you look at it just on the surface of that season, you would think, God, all the players are crap. You know what I mean? But in reality, they're not. You know, in reality, everyone had a bad season with the exception of Luke Shaw. Like, even De Gea had a pretty poor season by his standards. You know what I mean? But yet, you know, you look at Lukaku and everyone's saying, okay, you put on a bit of muscle. He's terrible. He's this, that, and the other and all. But you don't go from being a really, really good player to a really, really bad player. You know, Pogba's the same. The fans hounding him out on the last day of the season. You know what I mean? Yet, if you look at his stats from midfield in those 12 weeks where Solskjaer and the team were performing, he was outstanding.
To be honest with you, Ted, can I chime in for you there? Because I'm going to back you up on the Lukaku situation. I've obviously followed Lukaku a long time because obviously he was at Chelsea as well. Through social media, even on the Chelsea fan forums and even on the Belgian fan forums, this has been a topic of conversation for Lukaku, even the Everton fan forums, for a long time. Even with Everton, he was never always scoring the goals that were always the important match-winning goals that, say, a Diego Costa or a Drogba or Torres for Liverpool was scoring. Or, you know, York and Cole, for example, Van Nistelrooy. He was always adding to goals when they were winning. Do you know what I mean? And I think, like, I'm not saying he never done that, but he wasn't that striker that would literally score you that last-minute header in a Munich match. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and for Belgium as well, that is the case as well. Do you know what I mean? Because Belgium have three or four top-notch strikers that they chop and change. Origi has actually scored, I'd say, as much important goals for Belgium as Lukaku has, to be honest. Like,
I do get what Niall's saying as well, though, about, you know, you see, like, Belgium, as I said, is a different, they're a different animal. They're a very selfless team. Like, they all play for Belgium, if that makes sense. You know, at United, you've got Pogba, who, like, yeah, he's quality. He has all this ability and he has all this potential. But who does Paul Pogba play for? Paul Pogba plays for Paul Pogba. He doesn't play for United. He wants to be the headline. He doesn't want the headline to read United win the Champions League, United win the Premier League title. He wants it to be Paul Pogba wins this. And that sort of selfishness hinders the team, because there's times where you're thinking, just pass that ball, don't hold on to it. And he holds on to it and then he'll lose it. And then he gets in a strop that no one was there for him to pass it. But the pass was on, but you just took two more touches and then the pass was no longer on. Then you have...
Yeah, I think the problem with that as well is, though, I mean, when Zlatan was there, it was the Zlatan show and everyone loved it. So, like, you can't...
Yeah, but when Zlatan was there, Zlatan was consistently performing, you know?
Yeah, but this is the point I'm saying. The point I'm saying is you could name about seven players off United or six players off United starting 11. And, like, they're way better players than what they showed last season. Rashford is a much better player than he showed last season. Martial didn't get much of a chance, but he's a much better player than he showed last season. Alexis Sanchez hasn't suddenly become a bad player since he went to United. You know what I mean? These are good players. It's just because of Mourinho being there and that effect, and then the changeover and managers and various things and stuff like that, players are all over the camp. And then they're reading in the paper every week that they're donkeys and they can't do this and they can't do that. And, you know, they're being hounded out all over the place.
You know what I mean?
So that does nothing for their confidence either. I mean, when Solskjaer came in, you went on, what was it, a 12 or a 14 game run or something like that? Yes, we're unbelievable. We're unbelievable. That's more like the United, and that's the same players.
Yeah, I do agree with you on that. But part of it is, especially on the Sanchez one, right? Sanchez is a very, when he was at Arsenal, Sanchez was the man. Like, it was the Sanchez show, right? That's not the case at United, and it can't be the case. Well, Pogba is there because you've got two players that need to be, you know, the influence on the team. And that's why I think Sanchez doesn't really work in our team, because both him and Pogba are like struggling with each other for that position. And that's, you know, that's something we need to work out ourselves. But as you said, the players like Rashford and stuff didn't perform to the standards they can. And part of it is that they get slated, but that is part of playing for one of the biggest teams in the world. Like, we've had a bad couple of years since Fergie's left. And I'm not going to say, like, I can't deny that. But when you're playing for a club that something is expected, like, okay, we had a brutal season last season and realistically nobody's expecting us to win the league next season. But there is always that expectation that you should be because of the team you're playing for, which is United. And
I think there's an expectation of effort.
Yeah,
you know, there's an expectation that when you go out there that you, like, you know, you give it 100%, and if 100% isn't good enough, or you give away a goal in the last minute that ends up being a draw, then that's fine. But with the managerial stuff that's going on there and all the other stuff in the background, there seems to be a lack of effort. You know what I mean? It's not that the players are bad. Like, you think about it. If you sell Lukaku to Inter, let's be honest here between the trees. If Lukaku goes to Inter and plays in Serie A, he'll light the league up.
Yeah, he will. He will. The locker room, and I think that this is probably one of the biggest problems that we're having at our club, is that the locker room is poisonous, right? And a lot of people say that's on Pogba. I think that there is part of that's him, but there's another person that's a real poison in that locker room. And it's Jesse Lingard, because this is a guy who does go out and give all the effort when he plays, right? But backstage, he's a scene, like, there's the joke that, you know, he's a young, talented player. He's not young. He's 20. He's 27 or something now. Like, yeah. He's one of the elders of the locker room. He's a veteran. And you've got these younger, newer guys, Rashford, Wan-Bissaka, these are all coming in. And they're looking at him and they're looking at Pogba. And I don't mind what these lads do in their free time, you know. You know, if they want to go and dance and stuff, that's fine. But he's spending his time, like, United have just lost a big game. What do you see coming out of the dressing room? Him and Paul Pogba having a little dance. That shouldn't happen. That's whatever about if we've won a game and you do that, people will kind of let that go. You can't do that when you're losing games and when you're coming sixth in the league and coming sixth by like the skin of your teeth as well. That is, you need to have a look at yourself. You need to have a look at the team and you need to realize maybe I shouldn't post this because of course the fans are going to jump on me. Of course the media is going to jump on me because I'm acting like this and my team is doing brutal. And he's just, it's like it doesn't make sense to him. It's like he is a child. It's like, oh, I didn't realize that could come back and hurt me. I'll just do it.
I think he's very calculated. I think he knows exactly what he's doing.
Well, guys, listen, I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to leave it right there because we've literally gone about 10 minutes over. I'm talking about Man United, but it was actually interesting to talk about because it all valid points. It's going to be a case of what comes next season and what happens over the next 4 weeks, you know?
We have a first game of the season.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what I'll do because we're short for time now. I will allow you both to ask me one question about a certain appointment and a certain thing going on with my club if you want. And I'll answer it that way because I don't really want to go into a spiel about what I think and blah, blah, blah. Do you know what I mean? Anyone that follows me on social media knows exactly how I'm feeling. So if you want to just ask me one simple question, don't throw me under the bus. We can move on.
Well, realistically, how do you think you're going to do this year?
Realistically, I'm kind of with where Ted was at the start. I think there's an opportunity there for the top four. I think the squad, it's lost one player. That's fair enough. Obviously, you know, a huge player for us. But I think Sky Sports posted up a percentage of, you know, how we played under Sarri when Hazard wasn't in the team, when he was out for, I think, about 8 or 9 games or something. There were still goals coming into the team. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, what I am excited about, I understand that... that we can't sign anybody. Obviously, we've signed Pulisic. I'm excited by him. I know he's a young talent and I don't expect him to come in and fill Hazard's shoes. However, I do think Hudson-Odoi is absolute quality. There's a reason that the likes of Bayern Munich were trying to get him and really, really trying to get him to replace Arjen Robben, who's no small fry either, you know? So, realistically, yeah, I think we can get the top four. I think the dressing room is going to be a lot more harmonious at Chelsea now than it has been in a long time. Certainly more than United's is at the moment, which I'm sure Ted would agree. The fact that the old boys coming in as well. Lampard is bigger than any player could be at that club, you know, incoming or already there. I think the fact that Jody Morris has come in is a huge factor. And Joe Edwards coming up from the under-23s. Chelsea have pretty much been the team on top in the youth divisions. We've talked about this, Niall, for a long time over the last years. Probably the best youth team in the world for a long, long time. And all these kids have never got a chance, you know. I mean, we're talking about Wan-Bissaka. You're looking at a young lad, Reece James, who everyone's been touting. I think even Liverpool were looking at him for a long time too. won the player of the year there at Wigan at 18 years old. I know it's Wigan and it's the championship, but it's still no mean feat to do that at 18, you know. There's young, hungry guys coming in. Look at the Lampard effect already. Tyne Loftus-Cheek down to a 5-year contract. Mason Mount soon, and Hudson-Odoi is just ready to sign as well, apparently. So there's a big feel-good factor there. I know it's a big task for Lampard. Listen, people doubted Lampard as a player. Everyone's seen that famous video where Harry Redknapp went on a rant when they were trying to say that some jabroni, that no one even knows who he is now, when the West Ham fans were saying he was better than Lampard. And look how history, you know, showed that one. So I don't doubt Lampard. I think he's, you know, he's a very, very smart man. He played very good football with Derby last year. Look what he done to Chelsea. Look what he done to United in the Carabao Cup. We should have been knocked out to them, let's be honest. Took 2 own goals to actually keep us in the game. They done very well on absolutely pretty much no money and just loan signing. So, I mean, for me, I'm excited by it. And I do think top four is realistic. But like I say, I'm not going to bank on it. I would be happy with, like Ted was kind of alluding to earlier, you know, people expect that. As Lampard said in his press conference, people expect Chelsea to be competitive. So I just want to see us competitive. I want to see that. I want to see the building for the future. Do you know what I mean? And that's what seems to be happening now. So,
It's interesting in the Prem at the moment, because there's lots of teams out there now spending money. You know, the likes of Leicester, Wolves, you know, Everton, teams like that. Like, and they're all setting a bit of a pace as well. You know what I mean? So for me this year, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those teams slipped into that fourth spot. Like, you know what I mean? Because I think Leicester will play a real good standard of football under Brendan Rodgers. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, but it won't be. I don't believe.
You don't think they'll be competitive? They were pretty competitive last season. The looks of Leicester,
but not to be up in the top four. Like, let's be honest, right? Chelsea have lost one player. If you look at that squad, that's still a very good squad with some big players coming back. For example, Zouma. Like, there's no chance Everton are getting him now. Lampard has pretty much said as much. Zouma was one of the top four defenders in the league last year, coming in to back line already of David Luiz, Rudiger, Christensen, and Amori. You know, take your pick. Like,
I suppose the challenge there will be for Frank Lampard, how he gels the youth coming up with the senior players that are there, and how he balances that. And that sometimes can take a season to sort out, where you sort of do drift away a bit.
Agree.
But you can see that there's still improvements.
Yeah, I agree. Like with Liverpool, what Klopp done, to be honest. That's what I'd be happy with. If I see Lampard doing what Klopp has done, and take a on that young left back, i.e. in your case, Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd see that risk. When Aspel having a bad game, don't be afraid, if he's had 2 bad games, to put young Reece James in there and say, right, you go and take that spot if you want it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what I was saying to you the other day about Lampard. You have to be brave enough to make that decision.
I think he will be.
You know what I mean? I think he will as well, because I think in the first season in there, like, the expectation, you know, it won't be off the scale. You know what I mean? They'll understand that it's a bit of a transition.
Yeah. That's why don't forget, I'm very excited. If you look at what Chelsea are doing now, and I'm sure both of you will agree, they're changing the module. In a lot of ways, Petr Cech has come back now as kind of director of football. He's going to be the direct link between Frank Lampard and Marina. Frank Lampard's already friends with Marina anyway. You're looking at Drogba coming back. Makélélé is now going to be, you know, in charge of the youth and how the loaning system works. You look at Ashley Cole today. It looks like he's joining the team. Jody Morris, who was that successful manager of winning all those under 16 and under 18 Champions Leagues.
I think you're laying a real great foundation there for success going forward.
Definitely.
But it just depends how long it will take for it, you know, to gel and kick in.
I agree. Yeah.
And it's about, as I said to you the other day online, it's about having that patience to let that happen, you know what I mean? And don't be just, you know, the way they just in the last few seasons, they've just been losing it. Like,
even if it's top 6 this year for me, I take a Europa League spot for next year. And then with a transfer window for Frank to kind of I mean, you already look what Frank has done and what he said in his press conference. No one will play for this club if they do not want to play for the badge. Exactly what Solskjaer should be coming out with. Morata, on your fucking bike. You know what I mean? Morata. We were talking about earlier, Ted, as well, about, you know, players that are, you know, mentally fragile or whatever. There's Morata. See you later. I mean, there's another great piece of business by Marina. 50 million, possibly rising to 60. Got your money back for a player that epically failed in the Premier League because he didn't have the stop. You know what I mean? Coming out and slating your teammates saying, oh, nobody but the Spanish lads like me. Don't be stupid. You know what I mean? Stick at Atletico and there you go. So that kind of statement is what you want from your manager to say, right, fuck you. There's your move. See you later on your bike. Bakayoko, after having a great, I know he didn't play well in his first season. First season in the Premier League can always be difficult anyway. We have to remember that. But he had a stellar season at AC Milan. He's come back and said he wants to stay and fight for his position. Boom. Perfect. Kept Kovacic. He wanted to stay. I think Kovacic is a great player anyway. Great little baller. Like to see more from him. But again, first season in the Premier League. You know, it's a strong squad, but Noel is 100%. It's about how he blends it this year. And I would take top six this year. And be competitive in the Champions League. Try and get to the knockout stages. I think the squad's good enough to get to the knockout stages. But I'm not expecting us to win it or anything, you know? Good run in the Cups. Top six. Build that foundation like Klopp done. And I think Klopp should be the marker for Lampard in that sense to kind of show what you can do, you know?
Yeah. See, the question I'd have there is, right, and I don't mean this like, I don't mean this as a United fan taking a shot at Liverpool here, right? But as Niall said, he needs to be given time to do that.
Yeah.
The game these days doesn't really give that. Like,
that's the narrative, though, Ted. That's the narrative. As I said, like, this is all been set in place for someone like Frank Lampard bringing these guys back, as in the likes of Czech. They want to go to a different direction. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you take Klopp, for example, right, and they won the Champions League this year, right, but Klopp has been with Liverpool, what, is it 4 years now?
Yeah.
It's coming into his fourth year now, yeah.
Okay, so 3.5. So you scrap off the first half year, right? Scrap that off. This is 3 years. In 3 years, this is the first thing he's accomplished. I know he's got to the Champions League final last year, but again, you get to a final and you lose it, it doesn't, you know, you may as well not have got to the final in that sort of way as well.
Ted, a lot of people say that, but my flip point on that is you have to get to a final to win a final.
Exactly.
Klopp in those 3.5 seasons, he's gotten to 4 finals.
Yeah.
Now, okay, he's only won one. You know what I mean? But he's also, like, if you think of the rebuild job, when Klopp went into Liverpool, at first it was in disarray.
Yeah.
Oh, you know,
he had a massive rebuild to do as well. Like,
yeah, you know, but that's my point. Like, Lampard's going to have to try and do that with Chelsea. Solskjaer's trying to do it with United at the moment. But Liverpool were willing to give that time to Klopp. They were willing to give it to him. Like, they were willing to go, right, he hasn't accomplished anything this first half season, right? The second season, he still accomplished. The first full season, didn't accomplish anything. For second full season, didn't win anything, and they still stuck with him, right? And if he'd lost this year's Champions League final, they'd have stuck with him again. Whereas teams like Chelsea and teams like United don't tend to do that.
Oh yeah,
I think if you look at Liverpool, like, I think even in those times when there was transition there, I think we were able to see clearly what he was trying to achieve. So we were able to see the plan unfolding. Whereas if you look at Solskjaer at the moment and you look at United, United are just linked with everyone. So what is the actual plan?
But my,
you know what I mean? That doesn't, that...
For Chelsea, are Chelsea going to give that time? Like, that, it does look like there's a plan being laid there and foundations.
Yeah, but at least
this season nothing happens, but then next season nothing happens. How quick do the fans turn and go, oh, Frank Lampard this, Frank Lampard that? Like,
Ted, I'll say one thing. I know my own fan base pretty well. The Chelsea fans never turn on their own. At the end of the day, the only reason Chelsea fans turned on Mourinho is because he went to United. the Chelsea fans with Mourinho, even when he was in 10th place that year. Frank Lampard will not be...
Where did Lampard go?
Frank Lampard will never be turned on. Trust me. They don't. They sit on their own.
Where did Frank Lampard go?
What do you mean? Yeah, he went to City and the Chelsea fans still didn't turn on.
Oh, I don't know. There was a lot of Chelsea fans that were saying that there was loads of signs. Even at matches, there was I seen signs that were like, not a Chelsea legend.
And do you know who they were? Do you know who they were? They were the Prawn Sandwich Brigade. You're going to get it in every club culture, unfortunately. But
they were Liverpool fans with those signs. Bradley.
Probably, yes. To be honest, I'm pretty into with all the London boys in the sense that I keep in touch with a lot of the London heads. As you know, I've had Paul Canaville on the show before. So I'm pretty in with all the proper Chelsea lads, you know what I mean? Not the bad ones now. I'm not saying that.
But what I'm saying is that there is that history with Lampard that he did go and play for City. And that if two seasons in, things are not going well.
But you're kind of
going to be given that time, or will people turn on you again?
You're kind of clutching at silly straws there, really. I mean, you're looking for any little thing to think of doomsday. You should get a job for the Daily Mail with that kind of outlook.
Well, Barry wasn't well liked by the end of his tenure.
He wasn't liked because he turned around and said to him, "The fans don't matter." He's not a manager for the fans. That's why. I mean, Conte is still well respected. We all wished Conte well, even after the Sol Cor case. Trust me, the Chelsea fans are a lot more loyal a bunch. Like, the United fans aren't the only fans in the world that, you know, stick with each other and with the
Liverpool fans that make the decision, team.
Chelsea are a very loyal fan base. More so, like, we never give Torres stick, ever.
I think you'll kind of live and die by your results at the end of the day, no matter who you are. But I think the situation there is Frank had a cushy little number there at Derby. I'm sure he had a lovely position there, and I'm sure he didn't walk away from that unless there was reassurances there saying, "Look, it's going to take time to do this. You got to give me the time." And I'm sure Frank Lampard doesn't want to go to Chelsea and end up with egg on his face, looking like an ass, getting ridden out of the club. Like, you know what I mean? That would just kill his legacy.
You're talking about a man with an IQ, one of the 5% of 150. One of the 5% in the world that has an IQ of over 150. He's not a foolish man. Do you know what I mean?
But I'm not saying he's foolish, but it's the same thing that, you know, it's the board that make these decisions. And if Frank Lampard hasn't done well enough in 2 years, is the board going to be willing to wait?
Because I believe so, yeah. I believe so on this occasion.
This is the board that the first time Mourinho was with you, he wasn't the one that wanted to leave. The board decided that they were done with him.
Well, that was at a time, Ted, the first time that he left, that Chelsea really were, like, they were the big spenders in the league, and they really wanted, they saw a decline in the negative approach of football that he had. The first two seasons that he came, he obviously had, the Arjen Robben and Damien Duff effect, where they were just ripping teams apart as well as defending well. He then started to take the negative approach of sitting back and trying to do what Mourinho is now known for. And I think Chelsea wanted that kind of Barcelona brand of football. I'm not saying that that was the right move, don't get me wrong. But it was still youthful, you know, in terms of Abramovich's tenure. Do you know what I mean? And I think they've learned a lot of lessons over the last few years of seeing how well these young players do when they go off elsewhere. And obviously, you know, winning as much silverware as they have won, you know, in the last, you know, decade, basically, but especially over the last 5 years, Man City's youth team isn't anywhere near it, at the moment. Liverpool's isn't even, like, for example, and I don't mean this as a knock to Liverpool, Noel, but if you look at Chelsea's youth team, they're absolutely destroying teams. So if the likes of an Andy Robertson or, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold are getting chances at Liverpool, fans are understandably saying, why the fuck aren't these young lads getting a chance at Chelsea then?
I think the board at Chelsea is clever enough to understand that there's a difference in your expectation if you spend 200 million on players or if you're in a transfer ban where you have to blood your youth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, it's...
Boys,
That's why I wasn't saying for this year. I'm saying next year when they are able to do the transfers and stuff. If things aren't going well, then you know, does that leave Frank Lampard with egg on
his
face?
Yeah, well, no, I think he'd still have a bit of time. I think he'd still have a bit of time then as well, because they'd have to understand that, okay, let's suppose they blood the youth this year and they can't get any transfers in. Well then, okay, you're going to have to blood the youth. But if that doesn't work out, let's suppose Chelsea end up mid-table or 10th or something like that, they'll need to understand, okay, we have to go back into the market and we have to spend to become competitive again. You know what I mean? So you have to mix that blend. So they'll have to give him more time if it's a case where, let's say he's brought in half, say six players he's brought up from the youths and they don't work out. So then you have to go back into the market and you have to try and land a couple of world-class players to assist with that whole youth development. Yes. So that takes time as well. And I think they'll understand that as well. You know what I mean? So I think Frank will get year one, year two won't be a problem. I think if he goes into year three and there's still a problem, then a decision will have to be made.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think they'll give him at least the 3 years. If they don't, then they're fools and they're wasting their time.
Well, I agree with that, but I do think that they will. Look, lads.
Yeah, I think so.
It was a good conversation on that. We're obviously, do you know what? We're actually running out of time that we can't even talk about the wrestling, but that's fine. We can come back to that. Because that stuff transpiring over the next little while. It's exciting times, I guess, especially WWE have one up now. Obviously, we're bringing the two lads back in a lot of ways. So we can possibly have a chat about that maybe next week and see where we're going.
Sounds good.
I think while we're on this, actually, we'll just have a quick chat there with, obviously, Niall, as you know, we brought the secondary podcast out, Dynamo's Half Dozen. This is going to be a show where we literally can shoot the shit and talk about anything from the previous couple of weeks gone by or news from the weeks to come. The first show went pretty well. You probably heard it, Niall. Pretty good, I think. I think it went pretty well. It's just literally a shoot the shit. Niall, you can jump in on it with us at any time. We'll be able to do likes of conversations like this. And this is why it's a little bit of a teaser episode here, because we can have these sort of conversations where fans might be able to get involved as well. Do you know what I mean? And give their opinion that we can have them on. But what we're going to do, and you might like to do this, Niall, at some point, we're going to do maybe every couple of weeks. Ted, we were talking about this, where we actually... we'll both pick a pay-per-view from the history of wrestling that will be available, obviously, on the WWE Network that we'll watch in full and review. And it's something I've always wanted to do, because I find when someone actually challenges to go and watch, you know, pay-per-view X, whatever it may be, you actually find yourself going back and watching every match and taking notes and go, shit, I remember watching that live, but I didn't realize how good this match actually was at the time. And so we've decided that we do that. And it's not going to be a review in a Dave Meltzer kind of way. It's just going to be a chat about the pay-per-view itself and run through the matches. Something I've always wanted to do. So this coming...
Sounds good.
Yeah. So me and Ted have come with... My choice was first, because I'm the main man.
Lady.
was Slamboree 98 from WCW. This was a pay-per-view I remembered from years ago, sticking out in my mind. And I said to Ted, we should do that, because Chris Jericho had a huge influence on that pay-per-view in his prime in WCW. Dean Malenko did also. For example, you got the opening match was actually Fifth Finlay in his prime versus Benoit in his prime. So you can imagine how that goes. There was Brett and Randy Savage. I believe Eric Bischoff issued a Vince McMahon to appear in the show for a legitimate fight. It was actually a pretty cool pay-per-view. So I've kind of watched it. Ted is about to watch it, I believe.
No, I've watched it now, yeah.
You've watched it. So we're obviously going to have good conversation on that one, Ted, coming this week.
Yeah.
How easy was it to watch it, Ted?
Right, I didn't watch WCW back in the day, so certain things I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about here? Like, I'm real confused about what's going on, so Ian might need to explain that to me on the podcast.
Yeah,
like,
I can do that.
I have a general understanding of what's going on, But some
that's
of the
that's
stuff
why I that's that's why I asked you how easy was it to watch it.
In terms of the quality of some of the matches though, Ted, pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, some of them are pretty good. Some of them are less than that.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much similar to the way things run nowadays, but a lot more structure and storyline to what you'd see on a lot of the...
Well, I have no idea if the storyline's going in. I'm just watching matches cold. Like, I don't know what's going on here.
Well, it's better to watch some of the backyard stuff that call themselves promotions these days as well.
Yeah. Neither the WCW now at the time either.
Oh, no. They probably still had more structure than Joey Ryan's dick and more structure than Sammy Callahan as well, though. So let's be fair.
I heard his dick has serious structure.
Well, yeah, you can never.
That's just what I'm hearing.
You can never see an outline on his little pants, though. So I think his mustache is bigger than it. But that one's for Danny Butler specifically. That's not even a dig at Joey Ryan. Danny Butler.
We're not gonna talk about that suplex now, are we?
No, Danny Butler. Big shout out to Danny Butler because he thanked me the other week for how much I put him over on the show. And I was kind of like, all right. And he goes, yeah, you almost put me over as much as you bury Joey Ryan. So I didn't even have a problem with Joey Ryan at the moment. I just had to throw that in there just to put Danny over one more time. So he's one ahead, you know what I mean?
Very good.
Ah, you had to do it, look. But look, guys, that was a great episode, actually. I really enjoyed that conversation. We'll definitely maybe set one of these up for next week. And you know, Noel, if you want to join in on some of the half dozen stuff, we'll continue to promote the Wrestling Mania. Noel, actually, while we're on that, because you are still a very, very close friend and sponsor of the show, I still run the ads. Anything special in the shop over the next couple of weeks or anything you're doing? Or
there's a huge drive at the moment if you look at the merchandise on the retro stuff.
Okay.
There's tons and tons of retro stuff coming out at the moment. So they're nearly becoming our biggest sellers at the moment. Now, whether that's a reflection on the product at the moment or whatever, but like the amount of stuff that we're moving at the moment, the likes of Austin, NWO, Macho Man, Perfect, Ricky Steamboat, a lot of that stuff is moving fairly quicker now, a lot quicker than the current stuff.
Okay.
So that's a big drive. And then at the moment, we're after getting in another batch of boxing stuff and MMA stuff and that kind of stuff. And we're starting to bring in a bit of football stuff as well now.
So if anyone comes in over the next couple of weeks and mentions Dynamo's Dozen, can you sort them out?
As always, we do.
Damn straight. This is the boss, man.
We charge them an extra 20%.
An extra 20%. Exactly.
Yeah, someone has to pay for the beers when we do the live podcast.
Well, listen, that's it. And now Niall's kid's got to be able to eat raspberry ripple ice cream at the end of the day. So, you know, go in and pay the man. That's what I'll say. Go in and pay the man. No, listen, guys and girls, Niall will always go in and hook you up when you go in and when you mention the show. So, I mean, look, why wouldn't you do it? You'd be foolish not to. If you shop there anyway and you listen to the show, just do it. Have the balls, and we'll look after you. So, Noel, Ted, it's been fantastic, actually. And we will. I look forward to maybe next week or the next coming weeks, and we can revisit this chat, and we can obviously talk a little bit more about the wrestling side of things as well.
Yeah, we should aim to do another one now before the end of July, so we can update on the transfers and stuff like that.
Well, I agree with that. We're definitely going to do a special one, and we'll do that on the half dozen. And I think we'll try and get some other people in on it as well. Maybe try and do a live one.
Yeah.
Shop again. We'll try and do a live.
Maybe do one. Maybe do one for deadline day.
Yeah, we could do that. We could try and go in and do it. Do it in the shop live, Ted. If you're up for that as well, we'll try and go in and.
Yeah, we should be able to. Yeah,
we'll pick a day and we'll get some people in there, and we'll do it that way. All right, guys. Listen, my pleasure, as always, and I guess all that needs to be said is Dynamo over and out.